Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And those of you who are listening to the last hour of our program, we didn't get our telephone number out, but if you want to contact us, our telephone number for orders or contacting us is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Well, with that as a background, let's introduce our very special guest for the day, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, a good friend who actually worked in the Reagan administration in the Department of Education, has taught at the college level, who has testified before Congress, and he certainly is the finest researcher we have today, verifying the fact that there really is an agenda to destroy the United States. Very, very powerful men are working together to destroy what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave, because they have a different worldview. They believe in a ruling aristocracy controlling the world, and of course they believe that they are so much smarter than the rest of us that they have almost like a divine right of kings. They have almost like the manifest destiny to transform the world. With that as a background, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, now we're going to be talking about your latest article that appears on newsreviews.com, aren't we?
That's right.
All right, and what's the title of the article?
The title is Caution, the Dialectic Process at Work.
All right, fine. Well, I'm going to let you pick up the story, and I'll just try to be quiet, but that's pretty hard.
No, don't do that. I appreciate your pithy remarks.
All right, go right ahead.
Okay. I'm sure your listeners probably know what the term dialectic means. They've heard of the Hegelian dialectic. Actually, Hegel wasn't the first to come up with it, but it's generally known as his process. And Karl Marx would later pick up on that. And a dialectical process is where you have a thesis, and you have the opposite, an antithesis. And then a synthesis arrives in the middle, sort of a compromise, a middle ground, a combination. It can take various forms. Combining the two extremes is basically it. There are further refinements on it, but basically that's a process that is at work. And oftentimes it goes on with individuals and whole societies and the world where we're subjected to a dialectical process, and that's one of the means that the power elite, as I call them, use to achieve. They will play, for example, against the other, or they may make it appear that there's an alternation of power. You have these independent liberals over here, conservatives over there, and that you really have a choice, when actually the power elite will control both ends of the political spectrum and alternate power so that you think you have a choice. No. But the process that you have to look at, because the process, they can move in a direction that they want to move them. And we can pick up, I hear the music coming, I think we got a break.
Great, we do, and first, I think it's important that everything is this dialogue. They know how to manipulate pro-life, are we pro-family values, are we pro-homosexual, being manipulated to divert us from what's really going on. Well, this is our special guest this afternoon, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. He's taught at the university level. He's has actually served in the before Congress. researcher, and certainly we keep books here at Radio Liberty, and if you're he writes regularly with views.com on the web, views.com on the web. This idea of presenting two, since choice, they nothing ever really gets wrong. If we could just the Republicans did a children's life for, you know, for national organizations that and then they gave the money to another pushes abortion throughout the world, American people, that, and we feel that things are just, and we've got all this legislation in partial birth abortion, and then it's negated by the courts, and all they had to do, of course, was Supreme Court can't intervene. Jurisdiction, but neither the congressional president insisted on that. So we've saved no lives. Everything is perception, and that is how they manipulate our reality. Dr.
Sure. The dialectic of thesis, antithesis, and then, as I've said in the past, it takes various. Sometimes it can be a compromise between two extremes. Sometimes it's a position of power that pushes or the direction. And so, program, Dr. Stan, I gave a specific example of integration. Not just the fact that there's some powerful person like David Rockefeller who wants a world government, but showing how the plan of Cecil Rhodes to take the government of the whole world was to have. And we've often mentioned that, and many people mention it, but I thought in the article, and then in our
work. Hold that thought there. We'll be back in just a moment as we bring our stations on. Stan, our guest, is Dr. Cuddy, and so he's going to work as we move individual freedom and sovereignty towards the world government that's coming. Dr. Cuddy, please pick up the story.
Program, we've talked about the subject of globalization, which was the title of an article I had on newswithviews.com. The usage of certain powerful people on foreign relations and how they want a world government. And the approach was to link up regional economic arrangements into this world political and economic system and say it has to be managed by a world government. Many people talk about that, but in the article that we discussed previously on global bolts of how that, giving the example of how the European Union was linked up, or primarily the United States. Well, similarly, in this current subject on the dialectic, I thought I would give specific examples. It's one thing to say, well, you know, there's a thesis, antithesis, but to show how this works, I pick a particular, the intelligence community, CIA, for example, and its internet. What I did to give an example was I read Cummings. He had a book out some years ago, about 20 so years ago, called The Pied Piper, and it described the activities of Allard Lewinsohn, who had worked with the CIA in Africa and also in Portugal. And was made his research was that while outwardly was opposing Marxist in Africa, you would hear the president and the State Department saying we're opposed to those communists and Castro had had a revolution in Cuba and he was then peace and so forth for his goal in other countries. What Cummings found was that behind the scenes, the CIA, people like Lowenstein, were actually befriending and funding the. Now, the idea was to gradually, and I want to emphasize that gradual effort to either control them, or if you can't control these people, these revolutionaries, at least call them radical. What you can control them is, I mean, all X amount of dollars, and if your followers and so forth and so on, so why don't you play ball with us? You understand how that works. So that was the idea. On the one hand, you had appeared to oppose the Marxists in Africa, and on the other hand, you would actually fund them. So what that does, the two extreme viewpoints to move a particular policy reveals what is I call the dialectic at work. In South Africa in particular, the nation of South Africa played an important part in this, more so in the northern part of Africa. And that, as I said in previous programs, you had Cecil Rhodes, that big money man, formed a society in South Africa, and it was in 1891, it was of the elect, and as Rhodes himself said, it was to take the government of the whole thing. It wasn't just a British Empire thing. A lot of people emergence of the British Empire. American and Rhodes scholars, of course, would also come to Australia and Germany and so on. Now the focus would be primarily in these nations, U.S., England, world. So this scheme. And he would select, of course, upon his death, Lord Alfred Milner took over and picked up what he had selected. People like Bill Clinton, Albert, and others. So he had what was called the Rhodes Trust, and members of include people like the famous author Rudyard Kipling. Probably have read some of his books. If you actually get the by Rudyard Kipling, the one before 1800, will have swastika on the outside. You have to remember in our previous conversation, Rhodes and Ruskin had said, we are the best northern blood. This was a very elitist symbol. This is prior to Adolf Hitler. Has a whole history to that. But Rudyard Kipling is on his books. And on his gravestone will have a swastika. My book, The Globalist. Point in this article on the dialect. O2 letter, an actual letter. You see the handwriting of, and you'll notice some suggestive words. And he's writing it in Cape Town to the another famous author, leading early Fabian socialist. They formed the Fabian 84 immediately after the death of. Was that rather than have a nation as Marx, the proletariat against the bourgeois, be more subtle. They would be more sneaky, a gradual movement to basically Britain become socialist and then Commonwealth and so on as well. And so what you have is the Fabian socialist and the network. They would also network with others in this country, like, and really global elite use the dialectical move nations, entire individuals forward, according.
Is laid out in a book by H. G. Wells. An autobiography, which he wrote, I think, probably in the late 20s or early 1930s, and was a founder of Fabian Socialist, telling about called the coefficients that met from about 1901 to 1930. where they have the leaders of the Fabian Socialists, who are supposedly part of this group that's going to overthrow the wicked bourgeois, meeting regularly with the leaders of British finance, Robert Milner, people who control the banking, and their move the world towards the system. They're not going to take the money away from the wealthy. They're going to destroy the existing social order and control it themselves. Really, socialism and communism, all of these are elitist concepts, and what they teach you in college the reality that it is people who push and encourage socialism. The book, again, An Experiment, an Autobiography, written by H.G. Wells, where he lets the cat out of the bag exactly. The Fabian Socialists were working with pushing Marxism. But the same thing is going here in the States, where David Rockefeller, probably by far the most wealthy man in America, who does not understand.
No. Only Rockefeller, the Kennedy boys, Eric, Mick Jagger went to that school. Years later, there's a book, Old, where he's describing what they're doing, quote, and basically what he's and go, you know, every 4 years, 6 years, whatever, to implement socialism. And anybody familiar with government knows how this works. You may have a state legislature. Congress will pass a law. The law is general. What happens is, let's say it's a law about education. On the side, but it's important for your listeners. What happens is you have an let's say No Child Left Behind at the federal level, but it's so it goes to the Department of Education. And then you have a bunch of bureaucrats who sit down and write rules and legislation. That's how it works.
And of course, places that Congress never intended is any other didn't want what they came up with, but that law of our land, a law is made by elected representatives.
Unfortunately, today, they stick their own interpretation of these things in there. Was getting at his plot was you know, go walk around and grin and make babies and whatever. It's these bureaucrats on a train. He was saying, and because they're the ones who would occupy positions in federal government, state government, whatever, and they're the ones who would actually make sure that they had a socialist slant to it.
Interesting. We'd interviewed Ashley Moult, who is the he said, you know, for Parliament, we have all our debates, and it doesn't accomplish anything. We have no influence. Make the regulations, and we are. Ladies and gentlemen, in D.C., what the congressmen do is totally irrelevant. They want to, and of course they can appropriate money, take it from the defense. They simply get the money so they can carry it. The denominator is always the same. New world religion and destruction of Christianity as we know it. With Dr. Dan. Well, Dr. Kennedy, you pick up the story.
Sure. And that's correct. You mentioned earlier the term you used. bourgeoisie. The bourgeoisie concerned basically there's also an effort not only to destroy the wicked bourgeoisie, the middle class. I know this is what they want is a return to the old feudal DAL days where you had the elite, the you know, dukes, earls, knights, barons, and so forth at the bottom. And return to those days, it'll be a techno-feudal, technically oriented. They'll keep the mask, they'll give them their, and so on. But it'll be the elite at the top and a bunch of worker bees. Again, in a previous that I'd written, I talked about how that the schools, 2,000 people, the educational structures that they're planning to start. You're in the Monterey, in this workforce development board, and they're linking what occupations are needed, and they'll push those, and certificate, you know, I mean, not to graduate, not at first. You can graduate. Seek employment, the you know, you've gone through the high school program of taking welding. Now, this thing, rules and regulations, particular article on the dialectic, as I said, what you have is a net, for example, with, for example, William Whitney, back in the 1800s, late 1800s, just as Rhodes was developing his plan. And later on, they would carry, and they would carry out this plan to financially heavily to both major political parties. This would be, you know, the left and the right, the antithesis, so that the stupid, and that that fit very well. Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor at Georgia, advocated. Quigley, when he was using the secret records, if you call it, would be Sir Alfred Zimmern, Wesley Zimmern, with Quigley, with Charlie, the Rhodes people, the Rhodes. Quigley wasn't exposing these in a negative way, and he figured that they the world, that's why title was a good thing, and these people need to have recognition. Yes, Dr. Stan, that the plates destroyed to have another run of his books. And wised up to this, and there's a tape, and there was an interview with a too much.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with Dr. Dennis. Dr. Stan, our guest is Dr. Simply, I've been talking a little bit about a Professor Carol, who wrote a book called Tragedy and Hope. Society that Cecil Rhodes had created, that has become, which is today is American government. Now, the book was so revealed Mellon Company and destroyed the half of Professor Quigley's book. And if you doubt that to be true, we have an interview of the Washington Post reporter. We and it's available or certainly in our 14. And you'll hear book was suppressed. Books being suppressed in America, ladies and gentlemen. Books are suppressed in America, and there really is no Santa Claus. Go right ahead with the story, Dr. Cuddy.
Groups William Whitney and the people networking with the the opposite of the political spectrum, which is against the Marxist elements, extreme to the other extreme, moving the inexorably towards socialism. And liberals against political conservatives. And that's why it's important. The ultimate goal, of course, extremes you'd have, on the one hand, capitalism, and you go back and forth, and Teilhard de Chardin would say, the ultimate goal of socialism, which would be, that's why I put this nice Robert Minor, who was philosophically a communist, appeared in the St. Louis Post Wall Street. They had Rockefeller there, J.P. And Marx's hand, and here is Marx on Wall Street. Caption. And arm has built socialism. Him to Wall Street. The reason is these men, what I would call monopoly, different from free enterprise, because what they, well, the monopoly capitalists actually love socialism, which is the ultimate goal. You know, pay big contributions to a senator or whoever, and then they hold them to them. Legislation in Congress or at state legislature that these monopolies that would keep them in power, that would limit their competition, so that you would eventually, through rules and regulations, have some. Private industries, so to speak. So, this process is actually moving us path towards socialism, and in the early had a theorist named Antonio Gramsci, and he picked up on this. It was the same, began promoting a plan gradually to cultures of countries, not just the economics, you know, music, literature, the culture of a country. Level. You can their education, things like that. And that would get you revolutions that Karl Marx had been pushing. This idea of with one of Association of Helpers members, tightly knit what's called Circle of Initiates around him, and then outside of them he had another group, much larger group, called Association of Helpers, and they were in South Africa, U.S., and you know, different places. Also, in South Africa, one of his associates, and Christian Smut, and he's one of the people association who developed this concept of holism, ASM, the whole person, the whole person. And so, with the other members of the association who were in South Africa, members in U.S., South Africa, belong they're from Smut, stating that the political big wigs forward, end quote. And that's just what or wherever it is, saying, you know, I'm here, I make my speeches, but you
well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I spoke to Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and of course we were just talking about one of my favorite villains, and that was Jan Smuts. People. trying to understand the Boer War. The Afrikaners, who were the Dutch settlers, the number two man in the Afrikaans group, Jan Smuts, who was of Rhodes, and of course, who was leading the English, and Milner. So you basically had an opposition, both controlled by the same people, Milner. The Afrikaners, a long and bloody war, injured or killed, perhaps a make-believe war, where the leaders of both sides of the battle were controlled by the same people, and as I see in Iraq today, or even what went on in Vietnam, when we know that our government was financed by North Vietnamese. It's like
a key individual, and he had this. I read much to H. G. Wells, stating the quote: "The next step is to move the political bigwigs forward." End quote. Remember, you had said, Dr. Stan, about the fellow, and they make speech out of control. And it's through the this, and that's how they would quote move the political bigwigs forward. And so, exactly that. Smuts came out a few 1920s with a book. I think it was around 1926. It was a holistic concept. You know, today, holistic health and things like that. Well, Smuts is responsible for that. That sort of movement. And he described in this book what he called, quote, the foundations of a new order. He wasn't just a player in South Africa. This guy drafted nations, also one of the drafters of the preamble for the UN. And so, Smuts had this book in 26, of course, Wells and he are corresponding, and Wells and other people.
Smuts, who of course was a key player, actually headed the Afrikaans War during the Boer War when the Afrikaans English and 100,000 casualties later, the man who, of course, had led the Afrikaners is suddenly the right-hand man. And the war was simply government. All of never, of course, for the purpose of the man. For entire, allowed to understand. And so Smuts. And then 40 or 50, 30 or 40 years later, in draft, it's all about world government. People don't understand this is law. And there's Dr. Cuddy.
Sure. And a couple of years after Smuts's book, Holism and Evolution, H.G. Wells comes out with conspiracy blueprints for a world revolution. The reason in the Fabian window that you have H.G. of 1910, and he's thumbing his nose, is that he didn't break philosophically with these people, the Fabians and with Smuts and all, but what he did was figure, you know, why be secret about this stuff? And say what we're this book is about, the open conspiracy. His experiment in auto Wells is talking about this. He's furthering this idea. You know, it's a developing thing. His first book on this was about 1901, called Anticipations, and then, you know, he moves along, New Worlds for Old, and then he furthers this open conspiracy, and then he keeps building on this. And so by the time 34 rolls around in this experiment, democracy as, quote, an implemented liberal socialism, which will ultimately supply teaching, coercive, remember that word, coercive and directive to the whole world, remember, it's the whole world, not just South Africa and England, and all rational people, he's talking about himself, plans for political synthesis, remember, seem to grow bolder. The new plan, he capitalizes those letters, capital N, new, capital P, plan. The new plan in America, see, both sides, leftist, Bolshevik, you know, Eastern, plan in America to the new plan in Russia, and how to the ultimate world state, question mark? He goes on, there must be a common new religion there of the world, new world religion, must be a common faith in world government for mankind. Only after a huge cultural struggle, there's the Gramsci, the holism, the culture, only after a huge culture can we hope to see the world state, quote. So right there in a nutshell, dealing their plan, it involves both the extremes, the dialectic, political synthesis and cultural struggle, power lead is the synthesis of Western socialist government. There's examples of that because you have these powerful financiers from the Soviet century for their Soviet revolution and after the Soviet revolution. William Boyce Thompson with the Federal Reserve puts about a on foreign relations a coffers. The problem with the opposite, apparently, the opposite in the 1936, you have Representative John J. McCloy. He's there sitting in Hitler's box. Some years later, after the picture of him in July 1961, taking a friendly swim with the Khrushchev in the Black Sea. In fact, Khrushchev swimming trunks, and they got, you know, arms. It doesn't matter. You know, Hitler, communist leader, Khrushchev, people.
And, of course, these people, what's so difficult? Are totally supportive of communism. Why? Because it is an elitist system, and that's what they want, both for America and the world. They want, as Dr. Cuddy said earlier, a return to a feudalistic system, being the feudal lords, and you and I are being the slaves, and that is why this movement in America has been here in the United States. They can't let the American people know communism. They are the wicked enemy. They have the terrible atrocities. Absolutely, they have terrible atrocities. And them and support them. Foundation. Understand that so much. And the senseless century began to make sense.
Right. So you have individual. Got a signed picture of Lenin calling him, you know, Comrade Hammer and Comrade Lenin. They talk like that. Norman Hammerby, Gore's father, his vice president of that outfit.
You know, and of course, when on foreign relations, hit 68th Street, I've been there. At the big desk there, right next to that, they have a little stand, a lighted stand, and in that foreign affairs that was read and marked by Lenin, valuable possessions, the possession of this mass murderer who dwarfs Adolf Hitler in the tyranny that and the number. Council on Foreign Relations. That's why he is a hero to these leaders.
That's right. Hitler, you know, Lenin.
Oh, Chairman, now they're all the same.
Yeah, in fact, China is the next example I cover in this dialectic, because you have us saying, oh, you know, we have to fight those evil communists shuttling our nuclear technology over to the Second World War. Everybody afterwards said, wow, you know, how did those Soviets get that?
Oh, yeah, we've got to kill the Rosenberg. All you need to do is read the Verona Trans book. And here's Harry Hopkins, the right-hand man to FDR, as a Soviet agent. And if you read the book, Major Jordan's diary, you found out that Harry Hopkins set the plans for the Manhattan Project of the war, along with the heavy water and deuterium and the other things they needed for the atomic weapons.
Right, and similarly with the Chinese, you have General Marshall of absent when needed on December 7th fame of 41, and after the war he's doing all he can by, you know, the allowance of weapons and firing pins to go to the time against the communist Chinese, and so the communist Chinese are victorious.
Victorious because the American State Department put in an $125 million, which would probably be worth about 20 times that much today. $125 million was Chinese so that China wouldn't go communist. Congress didn't want it. The State Department refused to allow the ships to sail, and when they finally arrived in China, and were the cases of weapons were open, didn't have any bolts in them. Useless. And anybody in the listening audience who wants that verified, we have copies of that were put out by the 52 and 1953 that verify what I've said. And the tragedy is, this is what led to the McCarthy. Mistaken idea, it was communists in our government that were responsible for China going communist. It was never communists in our government. It was the members of the this that has always used communism to further their goal.
Right, and one of the key players find had been or was became a board member of the I group that is the Institute of Pacific Relations. And so the Communist Chinese defeat the Nationalist Chinese in 1949, and we were supposed to be supporting Chiang Kai-shek, but ultimately we weren't. We were undermining him, and that fits with that initial talking about with South Africa. On the one hand, everybody's saying, oh, we're against communism, but at the same time, is actually funding these people. Okay, so you have communist victories in the South and then in China. These are extremely important to this powerfully.
Don't forget, we turned Europe over to the communists.
Oh, yeah, we delayed entering into Berlin, you know, so the Soviets could come in there and grab the eastern Germany as well.
Even though,
we can get there before them. You know, they not. No, don't do that. 3 years after that, in 52, you have this group called the World Association of Parliamentary. In 52, and according to this, which is their plan for the, you know, the new world order, the world government when it comes about, have certain nations policing other. For that is obvious. You have American soldiers, Americans, but you know, if you have some Soviets in here or Chinese, they'd be perfectly willing to do that. And so, according to this map, what you find is that Mongolian—that's northern part of China. Chinese forces would be patrolling from southern. Now remember, that's where the beach is, where the communist Chinese Costco has a major presence there. They would be patrolling in the world government from that point on south into Mexico, where, once again, the communist Chinese tremendous. Okay. Now, the very next year, 53, is that's the year when Ford Foundation President Rouen Gaither informed. Committee Research Director Norman Dodd that they were actually under directives from the White House to every effort life in the United States is to make possible with the Soviet Union comfortable, that's gradual, comfortable merger with the Soviet Union. Country, America, Eastern Communist Country.
But about that 1952 map, you know, and you'd sent me a copy of that, actually, in that 1952 map, this was put out 54 years ago, so where were the American troops to be stationed in the
future? Stationed in where they are today, which is interesting, not like Australia, which is an ally, but, you know, according to the map, that's where we'd be. Yugoslavia, and then, you know, of course, we know we went. Of course, of all places, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, you're sitting around 50 years ago, and where you want American forces, well, let's have those American forces policing Moscow, you know, someplace like that. No. They're policing, which, of course, we know now why. They want that Caspian oil and Taliban, who is standing in the way of that, and get rid of Milosevic, you know, in Yugoslavia, because he's standing in the way. Key places where the would be.
Now, that's, I think what people have to understand, according to a long-range plan, why in heaven's name are the Iranians, you know, not agreeable to the offers of the West, you know, conflict in the Middle East? Why they can to inflame by the Palestinians, and why have the Israelis given up almost all of them? Given up over 90% of the land they had, and we're financed the Palestinians. Hamas, it was funded initially by the Israelis and by the CIA. That's covered in a book called The Devil's Game, which we actually carry, written, of course, by a gentleman who studied this for many years. The Palestinians, the United States government, funded Hamas. Now the Israelis are fighting. None of this makes sense unless there's a master plan behind everything going on. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yes. And why else would you say, well, give away the Panama Canal and back to the Panamanians so that they can, what, turn around and then give it to the communist operational command at both ends of the canal where they can, you know, block it, blow it up, whatever? It doesn't make any sense either unless it's part of this larger master plan.
Yeah, of course, when you know there's a master plan, then all of these unexplainable things begin to fit into place.
Right, and so towards the end of the they're very instrumental in all this, supporting with their flunkies in the New York Times, Castro's coming to power. And so they, you know, they portray him as a revolutionary for democracy and so on, when they know all the time that
they call him the Robin Hood of Cuba, the Robin Hood, the George Washington.
Yeah, that's right. And so, you have him coming to power, and of course, we know in the early 60s there's this Cuban Missile Crisis, and I won't go into it, but, I wrote this article that was in the Arizona Republic and some other papers about how it was a sham. That whole missile crisis was a sham because they deliberately left off their covers so we could see them. And the whole plan was that, yes, we'd see them, yes, we'd object, and they, therefore, could get us to withdraw from Turkey and agree never to invade Cuba again so it could be used as a training base for Latin America and Africa.
And, of course, it's like the Bay of Pigs. The Bay of Pigs invasion was staged to lose from the very, right. very beginning. An expeditionary force in Cuba where you were sure to lose, that they were sent in to be slaughtered. But we couldn't let the American people know that. We had to blame, it was they didn't have any air cover. You could have had all the air cover you wanted. You still couldn't have won because there was no way off the beach except under one road right past a military camp with 5,000 troops in it.
And so President Kennedy fires Allen Dulles, and then Kennedy gets assassinated, and lo and behold, who gets on the Warren Commission but Allen Dulles and John J. McCloy and, you know, the usual suspects. And so what you have here is a dialogue. You have Latin America having a training base, and Africa countries for Cuban missile crisis occurred. That same year, you have CFR member Lincoln Bloomfield preparing what was called Study Memorandum Number 7 for Secretary of State Dean Rusk, who just happened to be a Rhodes Scholar, and saying if the communist dynamic was greatly abated, the West would lose whatever.
Forget that Dean Rusk comes from the Rockefeller Foundation to become Secretary of State, then he leaves the Secretary of State to go back to the Rockefeller Foundation. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. These people give incest a bad name. We're going to be back in just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Cuddy's material, you need to understand what's really going on. Well, Dr. Cuddy, you've got 3 minutes.
Okay, well, at this point, you have a scholar getting this document from Lincoln Bloomfield talking about we can't abate the communist dynamic. We've got to have it there because that's part of the dialectic against, and the West would lose running around. And so this is how the dialectical process works. And it's the same thing domestically. Article I talk about Students for a Democratic Society and how there's this book, The Strawberry Statement. We had infiltrators. And they talked about how these men from Business International high us up. Industrialists, they were called the left wing of the ruling class. They offered these big finance our administrations. We were offered ESSO, that's now Exxon, it's Rockefeller, ESSO, money, and they want us, quote, to make a lot of radical and look more to the center as they move left. In other words, you push that leftist radicalism, and then as you, David Rockefeller, moves toward the left, Chairman Mao, and all his accomplishments in the New York Times, appeared to be as radical. If David Rockefeller had done that 20 years earlier, everybody would. But now, you know, it doesn't look so because it's all those wacky protesters radical.
And of course, David Rockefeller writes this letter for the of 1973, after he's come back from China. Now, by this time, they've killed about 80 million people. 58 and 82. Why? They had starved to death about between 30 and 42 million. The government figures were 42 million. David Rockefeller says, what did David Rockefeller say? You know, about
oh, he's the social sociological experiment. Chairman Mao was a wonderful person. He sort of made an offhand reference to, well, there may have been a few losses, but basically it was a great thing, and everybody should appreciate that. And the reason is, if you're going to have this world government, you can't ignore, you know, 1/4 of the world's population. So you communist China, you have to make it appear acceptable. Well, a conservative, quote-unquote, president like Richard Nixon, with David Rockefeller's boy, Henry Kissinger, opening the door to ping-pong diplomacy and so on.
Well, we're out of time, Dennis. We could go on for hours, and maybe one of these days we'll have the time to do it. But our guest today, and I think Dr. Cuddy would agree with me, that we're really a spiritual battle. There really are spiritual forces at work.
Oh, absolutely. That's why in the Rockefeller Brothers report in the 50s, they said...
Hold just a moment here. Go right ahead with that, Dr. Cuddy. You were saying that the Rockefeller Brothers Fund in the 1960s, what did they say about the importance of religion?
Kissinger had been... Now, this fund, in the late 50s, they had a mid-century challenge, it was called, report by the fund, and they said... We're going to have a, quote, new world order. And they went on to say it wouldn't just be political, economic, social. It would be spiritual as well. They deliberately included that element in this new world order.
They're doing today is they've infiltrated both the Protestant church, and we find the leader of the church growth movement, Mr. Rick Warren, going back to check in with the Council on Foreign Relations and talk to them, and then talk to nations and the Christian church. Embrace his peace plan, which of course is an international world order. Well, I'm Dr. Cuddy. Thank you so very much for being with us. Line for the new. get his book. God bless you. Thanks so very much for being with us. Bye. Okay, fine. Well, that was Dr. Dennis Cuddy. There, want to get his books and help his patient out. And even there's more program that you're going to get, and as I will tell you, I know because I went 4 years in history and learned the truth there. I was indoctrinated, but I was never told the things you're hearing. Now, certainly if you want the source of much of the information, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, that's Brotherhood of Darkness, will give you the places you can check out what we've said. If you want to know about the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created, and, of course, that eventually became the Council on Foreign Relations, because the Council is simply a front for why the book is long suppressed, but available through Radio Liberty. And if you don't believe the book was suppressed, you need to get the interview we offer with Professor Quigley, which is a unique part of history, which I purchased the rights to reproduce from Professor Quigley's. And so you can get that tape or the Tragedy and Hope special. They're both available through Radio Liberty, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are secret societies. You need to get our 4-tape set on The Bohemian Grove. You need to get our 4-tape set on Skull and Bones, and of course we carry a book written by Alexandra Robbins, who spent many years studying bones and talked to many people in Skull and Bones who gave her a lot of false information, but there's enough good information in that book to make it well worthwhile reading as we comment on it, and as I ask her the questions about the secret ceremony one person is witnessed, where they're to lead our nation, we're wearing their black and their black hoods and their strange pagan chants. The book, of course, is Secrets of the Tomb, and of course you can hear my interview with Alexandra Robbins, where I ask her about that's the 4-tape set of Skull and Bones, all available from Radio Liberty by calling 544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. We do hope website, RadioLiberty.com. We do carry the Berkey products. We carry Sanzian Radio's Miracle 2 products. We carry certainly books and other items. We join the Radio Liberty family or as we reach out across America every day. Stations every week, not 5 hours every day. Some are just half an hour, but at least people are having an opportunity to hear the truth about the spiritual battle. Because, ladies and gentlemen, there are supernatural forces that are involved. What is their goal? A new world order and a new world religion. And they are truly energized by evil. Pray for America. Please pray for Radio Liberty.